Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the World Cricket Show, the world's favourite cricket show, still turning up to work despite everything. My name is Adam Bayfield and I'll be your host for this one. And joining me over Zoom, emerging blinking from his little grotto of self-isolation and middle of the night ashes viewing and still refusing to have a shower, it's Tony Kerr.
Evening.
How's it going, Tone?
What's going on? Yeah, good, thanks. All good. Yeah, feeling a bit fresher.
Yeah, you've been a bit poorly this week.
I'm going to go back into work tomorrow. So, yeah, having basically been off exclusively for the period of the first Ashes test. And there are going to be questions asked, I'm sure. So,
yeah, your boss is quite a big cricket fan, isn't he?
I'm ready. Yeah, I'm ready to fight off any accusations that might come my way. But look, I can assure you, it was genuine.
You genuinely
wanted to isolate for 3 days to watch the cricket.
You didn't really sound that ill on the podcast, but we'll all take your word for it. Are you feeling any better?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, I'm very good. Top of the world. It's just, yeah, well, no, I'm very good. Yeah, very good, thanks.
That was a strange... sounded like there was more you wanted to say there.
No, I'm fine.
You feel better of
genuinely,
it.
Genuinely fine.
But yeah, we're on Zoom again, and not on Zoom because you are feeling better and you had a negative PCR result. So we're not on Zoom anymore because you might have COVID, but we're on Zoom because you haven't showered. And that was just I insisted that we do it over this. But it's good to talk to you again. We've been doing Ashes Daily. They said it wouldn't happen. They said they weren't really bothered one way or the other. But we have been doing it. We did 3 out of 3. Day 4... you know, we thought we'd give that a miss and just ignore it and just move on. But no, obviously we're going to be talking about the whole test and the result on this. But have you been enjoying Ashes Daily, Tone?
I've been loving it. I think it's the absolute top of the tree of Ashes Dailies that I've heard so far.
And the pinnacle of your career.
Yeah, it stands out. It does stand out. In a crowded field, it's exceptional stuff. It really is.
Well, you've finally been given the opportunity to host this podcast.
Yeah, and I've been getting some good feedback.
Very good feedback. From me?
Yeah, exactly. You've been very gracious, actually, with your generosity of compliments has been, yeah, unrivaled. This really is the season.
Yeah, I'd say I've been restrained. I've shown remarkable restraint in my compliments.
I think, we know each other well, and I know that when you really mean it, you won't say it. So, so you must be really impressed with my hosting because you haven't said a huge amount.
Well, anyway, we're not going to rehash everything that we said on those Ashes Dailies, but yeah, we will be. We're going to review the Brisbane Test in full. A fairly chastening start to the Ashes for England, I think it's fair to say, Tane. It was just a very familiar story, really, wasn't it, at the Gabba? It's an Ashes series in Australia. I feel sleep-deprived and, you know, just generally knackered, and England have lost in pretty substantial and arguably humiliating fashion. So just to quickly recap, contentious moment right at the beginning of the game, Joe Root winning the toss. And choosing to bat first, and England were all out on the first day, all out inside two sessions actually for 147, with Pat Cummins on his in his first test as captain, taking 5 for 38. Australia were in a spot of bother at one point. I mean, they're obviously ahead of the game, but they were 195 for 5 when Ollie Robinson took 2 wickets and 2 balls, and England at that stage would have felt that they were still in the game. But Travis Head with a quite astonishing 152 from 148 balls. Took Australia way out into the distance, and they eventually made 425. And England in their second innings well. It was the third day was very good for England, wasn't it? With Joe Root and David Milan putting together a partnership of, what was it, 158, 159. And that's the last time we spoke, Tane, was Ashes Daily day three. And we were feeling, you know, more cheerful, somewhat optimistic that things were looking up for England. I don't know about you, Tane, I went to bed thinking that I would wake up to, I don't know quite what I was expecting. And I did think that Australia were going to win, but I didn't think that when I checked my phone at whatever it was, 4 a.m, that it would say Australia win by 9 wickets. But that is what happened. And we're eventually all out for 297 as they collapsed on the fourth morning. And then Australia only needed 20 to win, and they did it with 9 wickets to spare. So it is 1-0. It's not been a great start, I think that's fair to say. Where did it all go wrong for England, Tane? And where we, I feel like we weren't, a lot of people possibly were, but were we getting carried away after Root and Milan and day three?
Never dream is basically the thing. We must have said it a few times over the years, but we never seem to learn. What's most annoying, it's incredibly annoying, isn't it, when you invest good amounts of your personal energy into something like this, and you come away so unfulfilled and so just like so flat. And I think as well, what's sort of most annoying is obviously just the way the time zone works. Off the back of sort of where Root and Milan had kind of got us to, or got England to, you basically all that expectation, and that you're sort of talking, you know, the talking us up, and yeah, thinking like, well, we're only whatever it is, 58 runs behind. 2 wickets down, like, you know, it's anybody's game now. And that goes on, you know, for literally 12 waking hours or more. I mean, that was quite a few hours, basically. 3 to 12. And then you sit there till 11:30, all excited. And then it's like, it's over within about 15 minutes. Really frustrating. What was the question? Where did it all go wrong?
Where did it all go wrong? Yeah. Well, hang on. I'll pivot to a different question here, because this is possibly something we didn't talk about enough on Ashes Daily. But how impressed were you with Australia? Like, obviously, we're going to talk in some detail about where it's gone wrong for England. But is there a danger of kind of overlooking the part that Australia have played in this?
Yeah, possibly. I suppose, given that most people, including us, expect Australia to win the series, or expected Australia to win the series comfortably going into it, like, did they perform beyond expectation? Like, probably not. I don't know. Like, they obviously won the game handsomely. There were impressive performances, clearly. Travis Head, obviously, with 152. And some of the bowling was pretty decent, you'd have to say. Cameron Green was impressive, picked up some big wickets. So that's just sort of another name to add to, you know, or another sort of danger man to add to the list. I think they were impressive. Obviously, they deserve credit, but and they can only beat what's in front of them, as the cliche goes. But what is in front of them possibly performed as well to expectation, which is basically for Australia to win comfortably. But what do you reckon?
I suppose that's why this game does feel so kind of depressing, is that it is just entirely what we expected. You know, if you asked one of us to kind of write a script for what would likely happen in this Gabba test, this is exactly what, you know, at both sides, as you say, performed to expectation. I think as far as Australia are concerned, like, yeah, they probably didn't have to be that good to win. You know, they didn't have to be at the top of their game. And like their bowling attack, you know, the bowlers were good without being outstanding. And obviously, like, Josh Hazlewood seemed to be carrying a bit of a niggle. Stark had a relatively quiet game. Lyon had a very quiet game until he took 4 wickets right at the end there.
Bet you were thrilled with that.
I've seen them bowl much better than this. But yeah, they did have some outstanding performances. I thought Labuschagne batted really, really well and kind of ominously well on day two. And Travis Head's contribution obviously was hugely decisive. The third fastest Ashes 100 ever. He's higher on the list than Ian Botham in 1981. Now, wouldn't have necessarily bet on Travis Head getting that high up the list. As we talked about on Ashes Daily, he was by no means guaranteed of a place in the side for this game. So, you know, huge credit to him there. And as you mentioned, Cameron Green, bowled really well. Obviously, didn't see anything of him with the bat. He was out first ball. But, you know, that is, it's kind of, it's slightly alarming, isn't it, for England and for other teams, because Cameron Green looked, you know, proper kind of frontline seam bowler. And that's one of the things that Australia have lacked kind of forever, in some respects, is a genuine all-rounder. So, you know, obviously you don't want to get carried away with just one performance. And, you know, this was, he took his first test wicket in this game. But, you know, that he looks a real prospect, and that's very encouraging for Australia, less so for us. But yeah, I mean, it was a good performance from Australia without having to be much more than that. It was familiar and disappointing from England. I mean, clearly the lack of preparation has had a big impact. You know, like Ben Stokes looked like a man who hasn't played cricket for 6 months. But some of the others look like they hadn't played cricket for 6 months as well. And, you know, obviously part of that is, well, a big part of that is the pandemic and things that they couldn't really legislate for, couldn't really do much about. The weather obviously meant that they the warm-up game fixtures they were going to have against the Lions squad couldn't happen. So there's not necessarily, it's tough to be too critical when those things happen, but at the same time, there are other reasons as well why they, you know, why they look so unprepared. But beyond that, where else did it go wrong? You know, some people have suggested that this game was lost before the start of play, you know, before the umpire called play. You know, that the selection and the toss were the decisive factors here. What do you reckon?
I don't know. Clearly it had an impact, and possibly things might have been different had it gone the other way or a different decision been made. But I think as we spoke about in the week, at the end of the day, we didn't get enough runs. That's just the bottom line. I think that the batting is obviously the major issue. I don't know how big a deal in terms of selection. Lots been made about Anderson and Broad not playing, but both of them weren't going to play. I don't see a situation like they would have selected both of them, because that would have meant leaving out one of Wood, Robinson, and Leach, or Leach presumably. Well, obviously it would. Yeah, I don't see a way that both those players play together in the series unless England choose not to lose basically a possible big weapons in obviously the pace of Wood, Robinson, who looked great. I mean, I don't think the bowlers really did much wrong in this match, did they? Okay, Australia scored 425, but there was a moment, England had them under the pump for a decent spell of that. But for a few things going differently, I mean, as you said, the Rory Burns drop in the slips, which was an absolute dolly, didn't help. Stokes overstepping for that Warner wicket. Conceivably, England could have kept Australia to considerably less in that first innings, and maybe it's a slightly different match. I'd say it's a bit overhyped, the kind of the Anderson Broad toss debate.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think it's a real red herring, actually, and it's fairly striking that once again, you know, England get bowled out for 147, and then in the second innings lose eight wickets for 60 or something. And all the talk is about, well, you know, the narrative is that where it went wrong was that they didn't pick Stuart Broad. And I just don't really understand that. And he, you know, yes, Broad was phenomenal had that phenomenal kind of hold over Warner in the 2019 Ashes. And yeah, 18 months ago was bowling as well as he ever has. But he hasn't been bowling as well as that this year. He also picked up an injury in August and hasn't played since then. So I think I wouldn't have been, like, had he played, I wouldn't have been too shocked if he'd looked quite rusty and had been bowling kind of 80 mile an hour lollipops as well, because that's it does take him a while to kind of get going again. So I think it's a real stretch to think that he would have made a massive difference, especially when the other the seam bowlers that they did pick bowled really well, as you say, and they were a bit unfortunate that they, you know, there was a lot of player misses, and, you know, where it's come down to is a lot of people like Jonathan Agnew on TMS are sort of incredulous that, Broad wasn't picked over Jack Leach. And I'm you kind of suggesting that it was absurd for England to pick a spinner looking at that pitch. But, well, A, Nathan Lyon took a forfeit here. But B, you know, I think it's a slightly weird situation that England have got themselves into this year, that they've not been picking, they didn't pick a spinner all summer. And there's not that many occasions where I think it's sensible to not have a spinner in Test cricket. And I will say as well, like, I think there's been too much focus on Jack Leach. Like, yes, he didn't bowl very well. And, you know, clearly the Australians had a plan to get after him and that worked and it rattled him. But again, like, this is not all about Jack Leach. Like, this is the reason they lost is because they got blown away, you know, in the batting. And what will happen now? Like, I can really imagine a situation now where they'll drop Leach for the second test, either for another seamer or bring Don Bess in. And Leach might never get another look in for England. Like, that is genuinely possible. And I'll be really cross if that's the case, because if you if you compare that, I think he's been really good for England, you know, so far in his career. It's, you know, it's, he's not kind of set the world alight, but I think he's done a really good job. And he was very good in India earlier this year, but he's struggled to get a real run in the team. But it could happen now that he, that he's written off after this. But you compare that with someone like Johnny Bairstow, who fails time and again with the bat, but it's just different for batsmen and bowlers. There's a different kind of perspective. Like, so Jack Leach is kind of the villain of the piece here, but like, what about someone like Rory Burns or Ollie Pope, who scored no runs? You know, they're not going to get dropped now and never play again. So I do think it's, the narrative around it is quite frustrating to me. And yeah, the seamers that were picked bowled really well. Broad may or may not have given them an extra few percentage points if they'd picked him over Leach, perhaps restricted Australia to 50 or 60 less. But that is so trivial by comparison with the real problem, which is that they can't bat. It's the same story again and again, Tone, isn't it? The batting has really struggled in the last 4 or 5 years. There's no quick solution to it, but that is the issue, not the selection of, or otherwise, of Stuart Broad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as you say, a definite red herring. And just the batting is hugely worrying, isn't it, at the moment? I mean, obviously, much has been made of Joe Root's calendar year, which has been stunning. But it's definitely, I mean, I wouldn't say it's masked the kind of greater issues, because it has, like, the other players really haven't had much place to hide. Obviously, everyone was sort of hoping for a Stokes miracle when he came to the crease, and that's asking a huge amount. Milan clearly batted well. Hamid looked promising, to be fair. I mean, what did he make? 27 and 25, which he'd want to be making more, but there was at least some promise there, some resilience, and you know, maybe you'd hope he'll have a reliable series. But yeah, beyond that, I mean, Ollie Pope hasn't really made significant runs since that century in South Africa. I mean, he's got a couple of half centuries, but not much else to shout about. And obviously, he's someone who when he scored that big century in South Africa, you know, people were talking about him as the sort of, you know, the next kind of sort of great English batsman with a huge amount of expectation. Likewise, Zach Crawley when he came in. I don't know, players aren't, it just continues. It's another year when probably no one knew has established themselves in England's batting lineup. And when was the last time that happened?
Well, it's a really good question. And there's a lot of interesting stats flying around in the aftermath of this game. But, you know, one of them being, as you mentioned, Joe Root's now scored the most runs of any England batsman in a calendar year. And that's in a year that has been dreadful for England in Test cricket. So that tells you something, doesn't it? And also that he scored more than 1,000 runs more than the second highest run scorer for England this year, which is Rory Burns, which is really quite astonishing. And it is turning into an awful year for England. I mean, it could easily, like, if they lose in Adelaide and in Melbourne on Boxing Day as well, which can't be ruled out, they will have lost. That will be the most test defeats for, well, in fact, it will actually equal the record for most test defeats by any team in a calendar year. So, you know, there's still some way to go, but as I say, I don't think it could be ruled out. So yeah, your question, Tone, of when was the last time someone came into the team? I mean, like, that a batsman came into the team and kind of made themselves a success at test level. I mean, truly, that is a great question, because apart from Joe Root, I think you actually have to go back to Jonathan Trott in 2009. I mean, obviously, like Ben Stokes, I suppose, would count in there. I'd sort of class him as a separate entity, as he's an all-rounder, but it's really quite a long time. The runs that England have scored in this decade, or the previous decade rather, were all from players who made their debut long before, like Cook and Strauss and Peterson and and Bell. It's Root, but genuinely, it's a real struggle to think of someone else who's like a proper success at test level. So I don't know what the solution is, because essentially these are the guys they've picked here are the best batsmen in England, or if they're not, they've tried all the others. So the system is not producing test standard batsmen, and that's a really long-term issue. Fixing that is a really long-term challenge, and it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could argue that, England are probably looking for, there's five slots in that team that are not in any way nailed down at all. Joss Butler, who I think, lots of people would want to see succeed, is still sort of struggling to make regular impacts. I mean, he's played a fair old number of tests now. He's played 54 tests now, and he's averaging 33. But again, he's that second innings, he sort of just prodded at one that he didn't need to, and it's like it's incredibly frustrating to watch. I mean, I don't know what they do, because obviously Crawley is the other batsman on the tour, isn't he? And he's he was in wretched form. That's the reason he was dropped, is because he couldn't buy a run. So I don't know. And Burns, he's had some good moments, hasn't he? But he's uncomfortable. I think I've said this before. He's an uncomfortable watch, and when he's not getting runs, it's even worse. I kind of feel sorry for them in a way, because you don't want to sort of extrapolate too much from this one very, very heavy defeat, but it obviously could well be a very, very chastening winter for these guys. It's not going to be much fun.
There's another good stat doing in the rounds that Rory Burns has only played five fewer tests than Pat Cummins, which is partly about the fact that Pat Cummins hasn't played as much test cricket as you think, but also does tell you that, Burns is not a newbie anymore. And I think he's done relatively well at times, and has scored a few hundreds and definitely needs to be persisted with. But yeah, as you say, it's that you fear a little bit for him and some of the others. And as I say, it's about what is the county system producing? When are the county championship fixtures being played? It's actually beginning and end of the season when it's difficult for. And the ball's hooping around, and it's difficult for batsmen. So, and about the prioritisation of white ball cricket. So, yeah, as I say, there's really no swift solution here. So, I suppose what who we're blaming is the system. But in terms of, is there anyone else we should blame? How much blame should Joe Root shoulder here, if any, Tone, as the captain? And I suppose we'll come on to this in a second, but there's a danger that perhaps we're writing them off too quickly. This is one test with four to go, and they're really rusty, having not had much of a warm-up, and it could be that things look different in a week or two's time. But it does feel worrying. It's a worrying start. And what's pie in all this?
You only have to look at probably a week out for the Ashes or a couple of weeks out, it was like the fear mongering and everything, and then you taught yourself up, and then obviously it's like the doomsday opening to the series. Everyone's negative, negative, negative. Then Root and Milan make a few runs, and then we're suddenly like, oh, it's on. And then 24 hours later, it's like, oh no, actually, it's all crap. It is easy to be very, very reactionary, but there's an established pattern, as you say. England had a wretched year all round, really, in Test cricket. So. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think you can be too harsh on Root. Clearly, he's doing his bit with the bat. He's a competent captain, but he hasn't got much to work with. I do think, to a certain extent, captains can be made to look better by the options available to them, obviously. And his captaincy isn't going to get more runs out the team. It's on those individual batsmen. So yeah, I don't know how much blame you can place on them. It does seem like there's a bit of the whole setup at the moment seems slightly clumsy and sort of haphazard. And, you know, I don't know, Silverwood hasn't exactly covered himself in glory this year, I don't think. How long has he been in charge? Has he been 2 years now?
2 years, yeah. I think the New Zealand tour of 2019.
Yeah, I mean, like when you compare him to previous coaches who did well, were just more vocal and I think there was a bit more of a sense of strong leadership. I don't know, you don't sort of hear him speak too much too often. Certainly when like Flower and Duncan Fletcher and were in charge, you know, there was much more, I don't know, it seemed like you heard from them a lot more and there was a bit more of a clear vision. I know, okay, cricket's changed and clearly the fact that England have been so good in white ball cricket, you know, shouldn't be kind of forgotten in this. Obviously, you know, it's not, I don't know whether it is possible to be, you know, absolutely flying on all fronts all the time, but and clearly there's been the pandemic, the preparation, the time together, the kind of normal stuff hasn't been there. So yeah, maybe it is too harsh to be too judgmental on him, but yeah, I don't know. You don't sense that Test cricket in England is moving in a positive direction at the moment. It's at best kind of treading water, and that water is, yeah, that treading is not hugely successful at the moment.
That water is getting deeper. I think I agree on Silverwood. I mean, the jury's still out. I mean, it doesn't feel like 2 years. It feels like he's not been in charge as long as that. But and because it does feel like the jury's still out. But actually, that's quite a long time now. Like, should be enough time sort of to make some kind of determination. But I do agree with you. And partly to quite a large extent, it's because of, you know, the comments that he made earlier this year and how kind of brazenly he and England were trumpeting this tour as their priority. And, you know, that in the summer they had New Zealand and India, the number one and two sides in the world, coming to England. And he was talking about how it was a good preparation for the Ashes. And if they now lose it, as they now look to be so kind of unprepared and out of their depth, like that's a pretty, resounding failure then, isn't it? And it's quite hard to see how he can carry on given that. So that, yeah, there's definitely questions to ask of Silverwood. And I do think there are of Root as well. I mean, yes, I agree with you that he can only work with what he's given. So it's not all his fault by any means. But all I would say on Root is he's not a new captain anymore. You know, he's been captain now 5 years. That's actually a decent chunk longer than Andrew Strauss, Alistair Cook or Nasser Hussain ever were. And yet it still feels like he's learning how to do it. And so he's just not a natural captain for me. I thought 5 years ago that it was a mistake to make him captain, and nothing I've seen since has changed my mind. So I don't want to write off him and England and this series too early, but it was particularly frustrating his post-match interview, which as always is just kind of trotting out cliches about how there's lots to learn, and, you know, and it's remarkably uninspiring.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like we've written off English cricket in the last 20 minutes. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe next week we'll be humming a different tune. Do you think we are writing them off too quickly?
It doesn't feel like we're being too hasty. I think it boils down to, you know, as we said before, you know, performing to expectation, and that expectation was extremely low. So I don't know, we'd probably already written them off to a certain extent. You know, I think we're prone to bouts of optimism as well when it's merited, but it's tough to be too excited. And clearly cricket is bigger, much bigger than the Ashes, but given the emphasis, you know, that's put on the series in England and Australia, and as you say, you know, it being the sort of priority, it is pretty worrying. I mean, if England lose 5-0, they'll still sell out, the test matches next time the Ashes are in England, of course, but it's just all very underwhelming, as you say. The coverage, obviously came together quite last minute. Sort of clouds sort of thrown over it by the whole racism kind of scandal, and Michael Vaughan's involvement with that. You know, there's not a huge amount of effort put into it by BT in terms of sort of live coverage, but then I suppose how much effort would you put in the middle of the night? I mean, I don't know what the viewing figures would be live for it. But when you compare to today's F1 finale, and I'm, you know, I used to be really into F1 when I was a kid. I don't really follow it very closely at all now, but I watched a bit, and you know, that's all anyone's been talking about today. It's been absolutely huge. So if England just have sort of limped their way, or not even limp, they get sort of slaughtered this winter and no one really notices, it'll be sort of pretty sad, really. Maybe this turns into a classic series England win, and by the time we get to the fifth test in Hobart, you know, everyone's tuned in and absolutely glued to it in the same way that they were with the F1 today. But that's probably, yeah, slightly fanciful thinking.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out totally, but it does have a whiff of 5-0 about it now. And you're right that if that is what happens, it will raise questions about, you know, is the Ashes actually very good? And we talked in 2019 that one of the reasons that people got so excited about that series and were comparing it to 2005, which I thought was not correct, was because actually the Ashes there hadn't been a good Ashes series for 10 years. So, you know, we have had a decade of fairly underwhelming Ashes, both in England and in Australia. I think even Australian fans should want England to compete here, because another 5-0 is no good for anybody. So everyone needs to be willing England to improve and to put in a performance and level things up in Adelaide, because otherwise, you know, if it does go 2-0, it's a really long way back from there. Well, it's not going to happen, is it? Because, you know, England would have to win all three to actually win the Ashes. And that's just nobody wants to see that, I don't think. You mentioned the fifth test is going to be in Hobart. Yeah, one thing that's happened in the last couple of days is that it has been announced. Obviously, it was going to be in Perth. That can't happen now for COVID reasons, but there was doubt about where it was going to be. But it's been announced that it will be in Hobart, and it's another day-night test. So that one and Adelaide are day-night tests. Does that help England at all, Tone, if we want reasons to be optimistic that perhaps it may not be 5-0? Is that something to cling on to?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think England haven't necessarily managed their day-night tests so far very well, have they?
No.
There's been some real cock-ups and some pretty sort of tough days and nights. I mean, in theory, you'd think yes, but I don't know. I'm not holding out a huge amount of confidence on that front.
Well, I think there's a danger as well that England kind of build that up too much into thinking that suddenly it's going to be like Headingley. But it will probably, the ball might move a bit under the lights, the pink ball under the lights, but it's still going to be Adelaide. There's firstly going to be, it's day night. It's not just night. You know, there's going to be hot afternoons as well. And the pitch will probably be flat. And yeah, England don't have a great record in day-night cricket, and Australia do. Australia have won all seven, I think, or eight day-night tests they've played at home. While I think it is perhaps more of a leveller, you know, England have more of a chance just because when the ball does move a bit, you know, that will bring their bowlers into the game a bit more, although will also put their batsmen under pressure. Under even more pressure. So it's perhaps a little bit more of a leveler, but the idea that it kind of swings the balance towards England or anything like that is absurd to me. I'm not convinced at all that this makes much of a difference.
No, well, exactly. I mean, England still need to get some runs, don't they, if they're going to win the match. So, as you said, it may give England's bowlers a little bit more to be excited about, but that's not enough, is it? It's not going to be enough.
Do you think we're being too down on them, too pessimistic?
No, on balance. I don't know.
No, we've been spot on.
We've been absolutely nailed it. I will stay up for the start of the first session of, you know, the next test. Am I excited about it? Not massively.
I wouldn't. I think that's quite ambitious to try and stay up to, because it's a day-night test. It starts at 4.
Oh, yeah, true. Good point. Yeah, good point. So she would have seen most of it, actually.
It's much better. Well, if you take...
Back in isolation.
Yeah, if you take another week of isolation, then you can watch it all. It is better. I don't know if I'll get up for 4, but I might get up for 5 or something like that, and then watch a few hours before I head off to work. When are we going to do Ashes Daily? I might have to do it on my lunch break, I guess.
Very doable. You're sort of tucking into your... You swap the cereal for quinoa or something.
Yeah, exactly. My quiche.
That's good. It's a good plan. It's a very good plan.
Okay, Tony. Well, I think that's going to be it for the World Cricket Show this time. We will be back on Thursday with another instalment of Ashes Daily. It's very exciting, isn't it? Have you been out and about this weekend, Tony? You've got out of isolation.
Yeah, I got out pretty big way. so I'll probably run myself into the ground again. You might sense I'm feeling quite tired today.
So you've run yourself into the ground just in time for Monday morning, another few days at home.
Yeah, exactly.
But I hope your boss isn't listening to this one.
No, I'll be feeling fresh tomorrow, I'm sure.
Fit as a fiddle.
Ready to go. Yeah, it's the festive season, isn't it? Got to get back out there and support the hospitality industry.
It is the festive season, Tony, and I was telling you off air just before I did the Santa Fun Run today, which is quite literally what it sounds like. I was dressed as Santa Claus running through the streets of St. Peterport.
And you couldn't rustle up any mates to join you, so you're sort of cutting quite a lonely figure.
Yeah, it's the kind of run that people do in groups. So, you get there and you just see these, groups of 4 or 5 Santas all there having a great time, having the time of their lives, and running together and kind of high-fiving their way around the course. It's just got that feel about it, hasn't it? It's not like a kind of serious marathon or anything like that, but I asked so many people and no one was interested, so I was just there on my own, dressed as Santa Claus, with a full beard and everything. Big groups dotted around, and then just me.
You just sort of milling about.
I was just milling about, just waiting. They were doing a warm-up to All I Want for Christmas Is You, of a dance warm-up, and I was just stood there with my arms folded across my chest. and then just ran it, got to the end, and everyone was kind of like hugging and cheering, and I just went, okay. Took my medal and walked home.
Sort of peeled the beard off as you kind of trudged off into the distance.
Binned it.
Chuck your sack over the shoulder and
And to all a good night, I said.
Well, you were just there for the time, really, weren't you?
Exactly, yeah. Doing it for Strava.
You're a regular Seb Coe now. Seb Coe? Not really Seb Coe. He was more appropriate.
What, a runner? Was Seb Coe the most up-to-date reference you could think of for a runner?
Yeah.
Mo Farah?
I mean, you're not really a Mo. What I mean is, you're probably more like Seb Coe now. I don't really see you as a Mo Farah at the moment.
All right, Tane, let's call it to an end there. If you enjoy the World Cricket Show, do get more involved on social media and send us an email, worldcricketshow@gmail.com, and we will be back with Ashes Daily. But until then, that's it from me, and that is it from Tony.
Cheery.
Bye bye for now.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.